Good morning. My name is Janice, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the NBTE Investor Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Mr. Von Lehn. You may begin your conference.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the NBTE Investor Call. This is Peter Von Lehn. I'm joined today by my colleagues, John Boozer and Doug Maynor. Today, we will be basing our discussion on the presentation that can be found on our website, www.nbprivateequitypartners.com. After the presentation, we will be opening the call up to questions. So now, turning to our presentation. As you know and can see on page one, NBTE is managed by Neuberger Berman. Neuberger Berman is one of the world's largest private independent employee-controlled asset management firms with $169 billion of assets under management. We have offices throughout North America, Europe, and Asia, a 70-year investment heritage, and manage assets across equities, fixed income, and alternatives. In NB Alternatives, which is where John, Doug, and I sit in the private equity area, we are one of the oldest private equity fund-to-funds managers in the world. We have a 22-year track record of substantial outperformance and offices in New York, Dallas, London, and Hong Kong. We manage approximately $11 billion of private equity commitments with dedicated teams in private equity fund-to-funds, secondaries, and co-investments. We have a large, deep team of professionals that's been highly stable over the years. Turning to NBTE in particular, on page three, you can see that we have a portfolio that's valued at $561 million as of August 31st. That portfolio is 83% in fund investments and 17% into direct co-investments. We have a tactical asset allocation approach with 32% of our net asset value in special situations and distressed investments. Our portfolio is also well positioned in the current market environment, and 46% of our net asset value has been invested in 2008, 2009, and 2010, what we believe are attractive valuations. We also are actively pursuing new investments in mid-cap buyout, special situations distressed, and secondaries. So with that brief introduction, I'd now like to hand it over to my colleague, Doug Maynor, who will go through some of the recent financial performance for NBTE. Doug?
Thank you, Peter. And turning over to slide four, you'll see a financial performance summary of NBP over the first 8 months of 2010, comparing the valuations in the monthly report for August to the audited year-end financials. As of August 31st, NBP had a private equity portfolio valued at $560.8 million and a net asset value of $486.4 million, which equates to a PE investment level of 115%. And the net asset value per share has increased modestly over the year from $9.46 per share to $9.52 per share as of August 31st. In the bullets at the bottom, you'll see a few details which we'll go into later in the presentation, but as of August 31st, NBP has excess capital resources of $86 million, so it's currently in a strong capital structure position, and has been very active in managing the portfolio throughout the year. We've funded capital calls and new and follow-on co-investments of $46 million in the first 8 months, and received distributions and sale proceeds of approximately $36 million during the first 8 months. Turning over to slide five, you will see the asset allocation for NBP's portfolio by the separate asset classes and investment types. And what's important to note is NBP continues to manage a broadly diversified portfolio, but interestingly, now as of August 31st, the special situations and distressed as an asset class is now the largest exposure within NBP's portfolio, at 32% between special situation funds and co-investments. But as broadly speaking, the portfolio continues to remain very diversified. Turning over to slide six, you'll see the diversification of capital deployment within NBP's underlying portfolio investments. And as Peter mentioned in the introduction, approximately 46% of NBP's current fair value is attributable to investments that were made during 2008, 2009, and 2010, a time period following the credit crunch and credit crisis where we believe there were very attractive valuations for new investments and attractive opportunities, particularly within special situations and mid-cap buyout. And so you'll see in the pie chart that, broadly speaking, MVP has greater than 5 years of vintage diversification in terms of the capital deployment and broad diversification even throughout the last 3 years. Turning over to slide 7, you can see the previous pie graph broken out into the tactical asset allocation approach throughout the last four primary vintages, going from the top left over to the top right, down to the bottom left, and over to the bottom right. You'll see the progression in MVP's tactical asset allocation. And interestingly, in the pie graphs at the bottom, you'll note that 81% of the investments deployed in 2008 were to special situations and mid-cap buyout investments, and 76% in 2009 and throughout year-to-date 2010, 76% to special situations and mid-cap buyout, and over 50% for those 2 years in terms of the last 3 years of our investments have gone to the special situations asset class. Turning over to slide 8, you'll see a graphical summary of NBP's portfolio activity during the first and second quarter and during July and August. Importantly, NBP's portfolio was cash flow positive during the first and second quarter with $14.2 million of distributions in Q1, $15.6 million of distributions in Q2. And during the last 2 months, clearly you can see in the orange bar that a large portion of the contributions in the second quarter and a majority of the contributions in July and August have gone to new co-investments in targeted opportunities that we believe are very attractive within mid-cap buyout and mezzanine co-investments. And so with that, we had more contributions than distributions during the last 2 months, but generally speaking, we see the portfolio activity picking up throughout 2010. So some more detail on the activity within the portfolio, particularly around liquidity events, sales, and IPOs on slide 9. You can see the $36.3 million of distributions within MVP's direct fund and co-investment portfolio. There were 41 companies in total that had sales and recapitalization events that led to a distribution. And the five largest totaled approximately $8.8 million and were diversified to two large cap investments in Unity Media and East Resources, two mid cap investments in East West Bancorp and Frontier Drilling, and one special situations investment in Ryerson. In addition, within MVP's diversified fund-to-funds investments in Fund 17 and Fund 18, there were an additional over 275 companies that completed liquidity events during the first 8 months of the year, generating $4.4 million of distributions to NBPE. In terms of IPOs, there were 28 portfolio companies in NBPE that had an IPO during the first 8 months of the year, and those companies had approximate fair value of $6.7 million as of August 31st. And the three largest and most significant were HireOne, which trades on the New York Stock Exchange, Metals USA on the New York Stock Exchange, and MEG Energy on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Turning over to slide 10, we discussed that MVP has made a number of new investments, and given the strong financial position that MVP is in, along with additional proceeds raised during the ZDP offering at the end of 2009, MVP has been in a very strong position to make new investments in an attractive market opportunity set. And you see the fund investments summarized on the left side of the page, the direct co-investments on the right side of the page. In total, MVP committed $24.5 million to primary and secondary fund investments. That was diversified through one primary commitment to Oaktree Opportunities Fund 8, a distressed debt fund, as well as a commitment to Bertram Growth Capital 2, a growth equity fund that's focused on the lower middle market. There was an additional $4.5 million of attractive secondary purchases. And in terms of co-investments, MVP's committed an aggregate $10 million to two new mezzanine special situations co-investments in the second lien debt of SonicWall and the PIC preferred shares of Suddenlink Communications. Within mid-cap buyout, MVP committed $6.9 million to five new co-investments, which you see summarized on the right side of the page. Turning over to slide 11, just an update on MVP's valuation dates. As we've updated you, the investor, in the past, we consistently and continue to try to get information to the marketplace and to our investors as soon as possible, and our information is never more than a month old in terms of our monthly updates, and the information that we include is always cumulative. You can see on the right side of the page the pie graph that breaks down the valuation dates for the August monthly report, where 67% of the portfolio values have been updated through June for the private holdings, and importantly, 30% of the portfolio was valued as of August through distressed debt credit-related funds, where we receive monthly NAV estimates as well as public securities that are marked to market on a daily basis, and a final 1% is in private funds still valued as of March 31st. In the bullets on the left, you can get a sense of NBPE's conservative approach to valuations. Looking through the underlying portfolio companies within the buyout sector, there are 32 investments that are held by multiple sponsors, and in those investments, NBPE uses the lowest valuation mark amongst the sponsor group for 22 of those 32 companies and uses a blended mark for the other 10. And if NBPE were to value all 32 of those investments at the average multiple, that would lead to $2.5 million or 5 cents per share of additional value. And if they were to value them at the highest mark among the sponsors, that would lead to $9.9 million of additional value within the portfolio, which equates to 19 cents per share. So with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague John Boozer to go through some of the performance metrics for our underlying portfolio companies.
Thanks, Doug. So if you turn on to page 12, we have here a summary of the performance metrics and the valuation techniques, really, of the largest 25 mid-cap companies and the largest 25 buyout, large-cap buyout companies. And these companies, as you can see under the largest, first bullet point under each heading, in each case, it's about $90 million of value, representing 16 or 17% of our total private equity fair value, and approximately 55% in each case of the total from that particular category, be it mid-cap or large-cap. So just in terms of scope, that represents in those 25 companies, companies that range in value as part of our net asset value from about $11.5 million for the largest in those top 50 companies total, down to about $1.1 million for the smallest of those 50 companies, with pretty good dispersion along the way in between those numbers. So focusing just for a minute on the mid-cap companies, you can see we have to use different valuation metrics for different companies. First, one mentioned there in the second bullet point is the most traditional of those, where we value the companies that are cash flow oriented based on multiples of their trailing EBITDA. And you can see the weighted average valuation multiple, which tracks with where our sponsors are for the most part, as Doug just described on the previous slide, is 9.3 times. We also monitor the leverage of the sponsors we back in their companies to see at what risk may their companies be. We're pretty comfortable with the mid-cap portfolio as a whole at 4.5 times leverage. The next bullet is five of our companies in the mid-cap portfolio have become publicly traded with a total of $8.8 million of value, and those, of course, are valued at the public trading prices. There's been 10% appreciation in those particular stocks during the first 6 months of the year. The next bullet point are five financial institutions that are typically valued by the marketplace as a function of book value. You can see they are valued by the sponsors at 1.32 times tangible book value, and importantly, they've had success in growing their book value over the last year by 24%, so those companies being well managed and performing for us. And then finally, we have two power generation companies with $15 million of fair value, and they're based on their generation capacity as a standard in the industry. On the right side, it's the largest 25 buyout companies. Again, 19 of those are privately held companies. You can see just by chance the valuation multiple in those companies is identical on a weighted average basis of 9.3 to the mid-cap, with more debt, as you would expect, in the large-cap companies of 6.2. Six of those 25 companies publicly traded, 18.7 million of the total value of the portfolio, and a 5% stock depreciation for those companies during the first 6 months of the year. So if you flip on to slide 13, this focuses on the mid-cap buyout portfolio and has some metrics by industry, so you can see how different industries have performed. A lot of information on this page. The bars represent the blue bar, the last 12 months of revenue growth for a particular asset class, and the greenish, goldish bar, last 12 months EBITDA growth. And you see the energy services sector, as you might imagine, less activity in that area currently. So the both the revenue and the EBITDA in that particular area have gone down. Across the mid-cap portfolio, with the exception of consumer retail, relatively flat to slight increases on average across the rest of the portfolio. You can notice the diamond and the square. The diamond is the enterprise value by industry. So if you look that as a multiple of EBITDA, you look over to the right side of the chart, you can see the multiple for the different industries with the healthcare, business services, and industrials having higher multiples in the marketplace today, with the other three sectors, energy services, consumer retail, and communications and media having lower market multiples. You also see the amount of debt in these companies, also looking to the right for the multiple. And so, for example, here the communications and media are the highest leverage of this portfolio, and the consumer retail, as you might expect, the lowest leverage in the group. We have the same chart on page 14 for the large cap portfolio. And again, here you see these companies have performed actually pretty well across the trailing 12 months. Again, the blue being the revenue growth, the blue bar, and the percentages on the left axis, and the EBITDA being the second or gold bar. And you see we've had pretty consistent EBITDA growth across this portfolio as managers have taken the corrective steps. And one of the things that we find as we visit with our managers about each of their companies as we've gone through this economic downturn is the very seasoned managers that we have invested with, by and large, have experience across different cycles and have taken steps with their companies to put them in good position, ready for any positive signs in their particular industry and the economy, ready to capture that growth and capture it into their EBITDA as well. So we're, again, I won't go through all the statistics. You can see them all there. But again, pretty consistent performance from those large cap firms. If you flip through to page 15, as we've talked about on these calls each time we have them, we've taken, and we've already talked about it here today, we've taken a very strong view of tactically allocating our portfolio in 2008, 2009, 2010 towards a special situation. So at the current point, as I believe Doug said earlier, 32% of our total private equity fair value is in different types of special situations. You can see the breakout by the strategy within the category of special situations in the pie chart on the lower left. 70% of that is distressed debt, with restructuring, mezzanine, and turnaround firms making up the rest of the fair value that we have currently in that category. As a strategy, we believe that distressed or the special situations generally is going to be a strong strategy with lots of opportunities both in the U.S. and Europe going forward, so we're pleased to have a large concentration there, not just of our current value, but also of managers who we can rely on to capture new opportunities in the marketplace. You also see on the right side, consistent with the fact that distressed debt is currently the largest portion of our special situations portfolio, those managers tend to hold debt securities, so you can see 81% are held in debt. The restructuring managers often convert debt into equity, and the turnaround managers often start with equity of troubled companies, and they make up the most part of the 19%. You'll see a gradual shift, we believe, in the pie chart on the right to more and more equity securities over time as restructuring and turnaround managers put more of their capital to work and some of the distressed debt turns into equity through transactions in those companies. So moving on to page 16, as Doug also mentioned in our activity for the year, we've been focused to some degree on transactions that have a current yield and are in a strong position, but not the most junior position in the capital structure, as most of our transactions are in equity. But here, as you see, we have two second lien debt transactions, Firth Rickson and Sonic Wall, and then Suddenly Communications, which is a preferred equity. We entered into these transactions because we think they'll generate an excellent return for NBPE, and we thought they were, on a risk-reward basis, excellent choices at this point in the marketplace and good diversifiers from a more equity-weighted portfolio that we have to have some not the most junior security position, as I mentioned earlier. So we're pretty happy and continue to look at transactions like that. And if you look at page 17, we often have talked about and continue to focus on as a manager maintaining a very strong capital position for NBPE. We don't want NBPE to ever be at risk of not being able to fund commitments, having to sell assets out into the marketplace, not for strategic reasons, but for reasons to have to raise capital to fund other assets that remain on our balance sheet. So you can see the chart shows the current position that Doug alluded to a little bit earlier. We have unfunded private equity commitments, you see in the first line of the chart on the left, of $148.5 million. We have cash and cash equivalents of $9.5 million, plus an undrawn credit facility of $225 out of the entire $250 of that credit facility. So we have resources we could call on of $234.5. So we have excess capital resources of things we could draw upon as compared to all the unfunded commitments of 86.1. So we're in a strong position financially to continue to make investments that we think improve the return profile and the diversification of our portfolio. On the right side of the chart, some more of the high-level asset side of the balance sheet statistics. The fair value of our private equity investments is 560.8. The net asset value of the company is 486.4, which means basically we have 115% level of private equity assets compared to our net asset value. We also have a commitment level of 146, representing the difference between 115 and 146, representing those unfunded private equity commitments on the left side of the page. So our commitment coverage level is 158%. Again, a very strong position to make investments that we think will improve the portfolio over time. So with that, I'll turn it back to Peter, who will start talking about the share performance.
Thanks, John. As you can see on page 18, NBPE's net asset value per ordinary share has increased by approximately 12% during the last 12 months. Unfortunately, during this, during the more recent months, the stock price of our ordinary shares has been relatively flat. We believe that the current stock price materially undervalues the true worth of NBPE. If you turn to page 19, we'd like to speak a little bit about the trading liquidity in ordinary shares of NBPE, because that's something that we are focused on and something that we often receive investor questions about. As you know, the ordinary shares of NBPE are listed on both the Euronext and the London Stock Exchange. Approximately 6 million shares of ordinary shares of NBPE were traded on these two exchanges in the last 12 months. However, many investors may not be aware that there were an additional 2.8 million ordinary shares of NBPE that were traded in blocks off-exchange during that same time period, and that those off-exchange trades do not show up in the volume numbers on either LSE or the Euronext. Therefore, we want to make sure that investors are aware that actual trading volumes are meaningfully higher for NBPE than what is shown in the exchange volumes. We plan on reporting this off-exchange volume to the extent that we become aware of it on a regular basis, because our goal, of course, is to provide the greatest possible transparency to investors on, of course, our portfolio, as you can see from this call, but also about the trading of our stock as well. On page 20, you can see what has happened with our zero dividend preference shares. Since the issuance of our issuance of ZDPs last year, towards the end of last year, the ZDPs have traded rather well, and generally at a premium to net asset value. Currently, they are trading at a 7.5% premium to their accreted value. We are pleased with the performance of the ZDPs to date. Turning to page 21, we continue to focus on the best interest of our shareholders. As you know, over the last few years, we have repurchased 5.8% of the Class A ordinary shares. This has been accretive to net asset value per share by approximately 39 cents. We have, of course, dual listed the shares on Euronext and LSE. We have issued the ZDP shares, which offers equity investors another method to access NBPE. And importantly, we continue to analyze and consider all options available to the company to enhance shareholder value. As mentioned by Doug and John before, NBPE is actively pursuing new investments and has, as it has done throughout 2010. And we believe that there are a number of attractive investment opportunities that continue to be available to NBPE in the current market environment. As John described, with our $86 million of excess capital resources, we're well positioned to capitalize on these opportunities. We're actively pursuing opportunities in small mid-cap buyout and special situations and distress, as well as secondaries. One item that's perhaps worth noting that investors may not be aware of when Doug was describing the various co-investments we've done recently, as well as the other co-investments we have in our portfolio, those co-investments are now, as I mentioned at the very beginning, about 17% of our overall portfolio. In those transactions, we are not paying any ongoing management fees or carry to the lead sponsors of those transactions. So that actually reduces a fee level for investors for that entire portion of our portfolio. Finally, we believe that NBPE continues to offer a compelling investment opportunity for investors. NBPE has an experienced investment manager with a strong long-term track record. We have a high-quality private equity portfolio. As John described, NBPE has a very strong financial position with capital available for new investments. And as well as our having our dual share class, as well as the dual listing. With that, we would like to open up to any questions that our investors may have.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question is from Michael Stern of Marin Capital Management.
Hi there, gentlemen. I was just wondering, when was the most recent date on which the company bought back shares, and are you set up to resume that program? Thank you.
Sure. You can see we actually believe have that the chart that shows all the purchases of stock is under the – it's called the Liquidity Enhancement Program. It's a technical name for the program. You can see on page 34 of this investor presentation, and we give full purchases. So the last purchases were done in spring of 2009. We renewed the program, and of course it's run by RBS because with any of these sorts of programs, an issuer has to hand that program over to someone else to actually execute under the program. But that was extended, and so that program continues to exist and is run by RBS. But so you can see on page 34 all purchases that were made, and that program is a program that continues to be live and under the investment authority of RBS, under guidelines, of course, that were set up by the board.
Your next question is from Ian Scholar of Oral Securities.
Good morning, guys. I was just wondering if you could talk a bit more about the commitment strategy. I mean, you talked about making some new investments during this year. In terms of commitments going forward, how do you see the pipeline? What sort of level of overcommitment are you prepared to take? Are you going to try and keep around about the current level, so therefore only make commitments when you're getting cash back from realizations?
Right. Well, one thing you'll note is that we've obviously made new commitments, but we've had a disproportionate amount of those relative to our historical portfolio be to direct co-investments as well as the secondaries, so a lower amount of primaries. Historically, we've even said back to the IPO that we would not have to, because we have the secondary and the co-investment capabilities, we would not need to have as much overcommitment as a group would have to have if they were a pure primary investor. One, it's more capital efficient. It also means we don't have to overcommit by as much to still be fully invested across cycles. And so that's actually very much, you know, what we have done historically, and you've seen us do. So you know, we have excellent deal flow across primaries, secondaries, and co-investments. But I think it would be fair to say that you would not need to see us making large amounts of primary investments to still being able to capture the opportunity sets as they come along. We don't go and have one number in the sense of, in terms of the exact amount for us to be overcommitting, because it varies by type of asset, because you have a higher velocity of capital, for example, on distressed funds than you have on a buyout fund or a venture fund. Also, there's a very different profile for some of these special situations, co-investments that are, for example, cash yielding with a fixed maturity, that sort of thing, versus an equity co-investment. So we very much focus on making sure, as John said, we maintain a very prudent capital structure, and we remain, in a position of having a very strong commitment cover ratio. But there's not one number we are focused on. It's actually looking at the portfolio in the totality, but, very much focusing on remaining focused on taking advantage of the opportunities we're seeing in the marketplace, while at the same time balancing that with having a prudent capital structure.
Yeah, I would just add to what Peter said that one of the things we factor in among many is the fact we like the higher velocity of capital coming back of some of these investments, in that as we get overcommitted, it brings us back more quickly to not so overcommitted by having the higher velocity capital, which then allows us again to opportunistically look at what's the best investment at that moment in the marketplace, rather than being just an investor in, say, primary investments or longer term investments where we would be out of the market and missing opportunities at any particular time. So we like the fact we will consistently have capital coming back that can be reinvested without substantially increasing how much we're overcommitted.
That's a great point, John. It's interesting because a lot of commentators or investors would say to us a few years ago, well, your portfolio is much younger than the average listed private equity vehicle, so therefore you won't see much in terms of realization for a very long time. Well, if we had the same portfolio as our peers, that would have been true, but since we didn't, since we have focused on investments with a higher velocity of capital, as John mentioned, you've seen that even though on average our portfolio is younger, I think it's fair to say that our liquidity profile and our realization profile has been, similar if not ahead of some of our peers that have older portfolios.
Thank you.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. There are no questions.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much to all of the investors on the call. We appreciate your ongoing interest and support. And as always, we have an open door policy, so please feel free to contact any of us at any time with any additional questions or you may have, or any additional information that you think would be useful for us to be providing to shareholders more generally. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.